Good morning and welcome to MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue, and we're coming to you from the campus of Middle Tennessee State University in Murfreesboro, Tennessee, and the studios of WMOT-FM. This morning we're going to introduce you to an exceptional young man named Lawrence Tumpag. He is a student here at MTSU, and what makes him exceptional is the background from which he has come and the circumstances he has had to overcome in order to pursue his dreams. He's a major in social work. He recently visited India, which we'll talk about a little bit later in the program. And I came to know Lawrence through his collection of dolls, which are indicative of different tribes in the Philippines. Lawrence is of Filipino heritage, by way of New Jersey, sort of, and Jackson, Tennessee. And he's here with us today to talk about his life. And he was recently elected a second vice president of Phi Kappa Phi Honor Society, which is probably the most prestigious honor society on campus. And congratulations to you for that, Lawrence.
Thank you so much. I appreciate the introduction.
Well, Lawrence, let's start out by talking about the piece that you wrote for Voices We Haven't Heard, which is a publication of the June Anderson Center for Women and Non-Traditional Students here on campus. You're familiar with all the folks at the center. You've stopped in there more than a few times. And you titled your piece, "O Brother, Where Art Thou?" Why did you give it that title?
Basically, this story was just a biography of my time in poverty and growing up without a father figure in my life. Actually, I did have several male figures, but they were not people that I could say were gentlemen or very beneficial in my upbringing and towards becoming a man. So all throughout my life, I've struggled with finding a male role model, a positive figure, and this question, or the title, which is a question, just stems from that.
Why do you think that your mother made the choices that she did in her life when it came to her male companions?
Well, my mother's a immigrant from the Philippines, and she's a single mother who raised me since birth here when I was born in New Jersey, and she tried her best she could to raise me, but a lot of times she was absent from the home because she had to work, and also she wanted to pursue education as a means to better our livelihoods here in America. So periodically she would come across men who she established relationships with, and she felt that these men could be those father figures for me.
And what exactly were these men like? Did you see a pattern established in the types of men she would bring home to meet you?
Well, my mother is a very caring and compassionate woman, so she would find, you know, suitors or relationships through work and other areas of her life. And it seemed to me that a lot of the men she fell in love with were people that were, I guess, economically disadvantaged, and she wanted to help them and to do her part in, I guess, assisting them the best she could. And unfortunately, like I said, these individuals were oftentimes not gentlemen, and actually took advantage of her assets and her stability.
So what you're talking about is verbal abuse, physical abuse, sexual abuse, or taking advantage of her, usurping her money, her monetary assets, all of the above?
The forms of abuse were just across the board. Actually, I was the main recipient of the abuse because my mother was away at work, and these men typically did not have employment, or they were, I guess, not really asked to be employed by my mother. She just wanted someone to take care of me and to raise me and whatnot.
So they were freeloading off of her, basically.
Well, that would be a blunt way to put it, but basically, I guess from your question, the types of abuse ranged from physical, emotional, psychological, and just other areas. As far as sexual abuse, I can't really say that I suffer that. But in some instances, I did, as far as how one individual was very sexually explicit in the household, and pornography became very prolific, and it became something of a norm in the household. And it also branched out into just the sexual nature that this individual presented towards my mother in my presence was very uncomfortable for me, and was also just psychologically trying as well.
You might say he was rather crude in his manner.
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. Why do you think that they tormented you? Why did they take it out on you? Did they see you as some sort of obstacle standing in the way of their relationship with your mother? Or did they just try to bully you because they figured they could get away with it?
Well, when I speak about these father figures or these male figures in my life, they're predominantly just three. The first one, he served in the military, I believe the Army branch of the military, and he was just raised himself to be tough and to have that toughened exterior. So I think he wanted to impart those qualities upon me. And I think he may have went a little overboard, because the physical abuse that I endured with him was sometimes excruciating, and this various types of corporal punishment that he inflicted upon me, I felt were just bizarre and not something that anyone should endure. The second one, he did not serve in the military, but he was just very set in his ways, and he felt that children should be seen and not heard, which I've heard a lot in various people I've come across and sharing, you know, about families here in America. But he just basically instilled that I had no voice, that I had no opinion, I had no rights, and anything that I had could be taken away, such as basic things like food. And some instances of psychological abuse, I would say, would be his threatening to, I guess, poison the food that he prepared, and just telling me that I should be counting down the days to when I turn 18, because that's right when I will be, you know, booted from the home. The third, he unfortunately passed away. I say unfortunately because, you know, I care for people, even though that they sometimes are, I guess, I don't know the words to say, but I do care for people, and I was there at his deathbed, and he passed away because of just heavy drinking and being on dialysis and whatnot, complications with that. And even though he treated me so harshly or whatnot, I was one of the only two people to see him pass on. But shortly after his passing, my mother met another gentleman, and this is the third and final person to come into my life, a male figure that was abusive to me. And his abuse, I guess, would be a culmination of physical, psychological, and sexual. And in 2007, I just had enough, and I took a stand for myself, and I came into a confrontation with this man, and being that he was a lot bigger than me, he showed me throughout the home, and I took a moment when he was done with that and just ran out the house. I lived in the country, so I was running into basically the country, the emptiness, and I don't know, I got a ride from my neighbor, and I went to a community college that I was staying at, a community college I was attending, and I just went from there.
Did all of the abuse occur in Jackson, Tennessee when you lived there?
No, actually, my mother moved around a lot. My family is actually from New Jersey, but she moved out into Seattle, Washington, and raised me there for my teenage years, or my early teen years. And we moved to Tennessee, I believe, in 1999 or so. So those two places are predominantly where these instances occurred.
Did your mother ever feel compelled to intervene, to stop this abuse? Did you tell her about it? Did she talk to the men about it?
Well, I believe my mother was just having so much on her plate with work and school, and so she was not present in the house to witness a lot of these instances that occurred. She ended her first relationship because she had just been fed up with the draining of her bills, or she finally come to the epiphany that this man was taking advantage of her, and also the discovery of drugs in the household was a culmination of everything in that relationship, and so she kicked him out. For the second one, she actually married this man, and she stuck by him to the end until he passed on, even in spite of, you know, the various times that I shared with her these types of abuse that I was going through. I don't know if she just felt like she couldn't leave, or she became too attached to him emotionally, because he surely wasn't providing for her financially. But she chose to stick by him to the end. And for the final relationship, she, I think, had some financial dependency upon this person, because out of the three, he was the one that had actual financial means to care for her. And he actually, during the time he was courting her, lavished her with gifts and various, you know, things. And so it was, I believe, the first time in her life that she had found a companion that actually provided that type of security for her.
What happened to your biological father?
I don't know my biological father. Actually, I always asked about him growing up, but I believe it was the second relationship that my mother had where it was revealed to me that bluntly by this guy that my father was a rapist, and so he kind of put it bluntly that I should have been ashamed to be even asking about him, and I didn't know him, you know, but mm-hmm. I always wondered who he was, and so when that was revealed to me, I guess it was kind of like the impression that he left, or my stepfather, when he shared that with me, was I was a mistake or something.
You seem to value education so much. I'm wondering if there have been any male teachers in your life who you have looked up to as role models or substitute fathers.
I did have those male figures periodically throughout my life that served that purpose, actually. I guess the earliest one would be the Scoutmasters that I had when I was involved with the Boy Scouts. I would spend, you know, time in the troop and just learning about different skills, and wilderness survival and whatnot, and we would go camping. And those were great times for me, actually. Other than that, within school, I would say I started finding those male figures or male teachers within the community college. I started community college, I believe, in 2005.
In Jackson, right.
In Jackson, Tennessee. And I just happened to come across these wonderful teachers, not just male, but also female, and they were really great and left a great impression upon me.
It sounds as though you really began to blossom and branch out and explore and develop yourself when you started going to community college, that was sort of a milestone event in your life.
Well, actually, community college was the time that I felt an escape from the home I was living in. I don't know, the first impression I received with community college was it was a safe place. It was the place I could go to just grow as a person without all this stuff going on in the house. It was a time for me to better myself with just knowledge and learning, and so it was just a safe place for me, one of the only safe places I knew.
You said you were at the bedside of the second male figure.
Yes.
And you stayed by his bedside as he died, and that kind of compassion towards someone who was not the most genteel, loving, or giving person in the world, certainly to you, is the kind of sentiment that I think is indicative of your choosing social work as a major. Why don't you try to elaborate a little bit on what drove you to or compelled you to pick social work and decide that you wanted to make that your career?
Well, I graduated from community college with an associate in history. But I guess to go a little back is when that third father, male figure in my life, when we had that altercation and I left the home with nothing but the clothes on my back, I ended up going to the community college, and it was summertime, and I happened to come across a student, and I just was so desperate that I shared with him that I was, like, my situation, and he helped me find a homeless shelter, and I lived in that shelter for about a month, and this was just the most shocking time in my life, because I had come from, you know, a well-to-do family. My mother, she had done quite well. You know, she had land, she had a house, she was paying off, and I'd never been in poverty like that, so I was living in a shelter, a homeless shelter, and needless to say, this shelter wasn't really well managed. The people took advantage of the homeless men that were living there, and we worked in factories, and at the end of the week, they took our paycheck and gave us, like, a few dollars back, and the rest was attributed or just, I mean, given for rent or whatnot. And so when living in homelessness and poverty, it kind of opened my eyes up, or it did open my eyes up to just a side of life that I never really knew about or experienced, at least firsthand. And this experience of homelessness inspired me to pursue social work.
And if you become a social worker after you get your degree, you'll be going into homes to document conditions where people are suffering abuse or could be suffering abuse. Women, children, the elderly, the handicapped, the vulnerable.
Definitely. Social work isn't just a career that focuses on the homeless or the impoverished, but all walks of life where people are suffering or needing assistance or needing a voice or people to advocate for them. So I'm finding through even my internship that social workers do a lot, and it doesn't only, it's a very generalist practice.
You do a great many things. There's a great diversity of skills. You have to have a very large skill set in order to be a good social worker.
Yes, ma'am, I believe so.
Your internship is at the Salvation Army. Can you talk a little bit about the work you're doing to help them?
The Salvation Army of Murfreesboro is a very great experience for me. It serves as a church, a homeless shelter for men and families, and it also provides resources to people in the community that are in need, such as providing food bags, sometimes assistance with utilities and rent when they are capable of providing that. And we also work closely with other agencies and ministries of the community in linking people to them when we're not able to assist. It's a Christian-based ministry, and it's heavily founded on the military because its origins stem from that military structure.
And you've noticed that a great many people who have need of the Salvation Army's services are unemployed and need help with their resumes because nobody has ever really taken the time, or they perhaps have not had access to the kind of instruction they need to put together a professional-looking resume that will get them a job and help them lift themselves up out of poverty, right?
Yes, ma'am. I've come to find through speaking with clients in interviews and progress interviews, or residents who live in the shelter, that it's a struggle for them because sometimes they don't have a simple resume to give to employers for them to remember them even, or to have contact information. So I started a idea or a project that's currently in progress where I would like to have people from MTSU, like students and anyone really who has a knowledge base in writing resumes, and I'm going to have a resume workshop for the homeless on April 19th, I believe from 6 to 7 p.m. at the Salvation Army Center.
And where is the Salvation Army Center located?
It's located on 1137 West Main Street.
And if people want to find out more about that, is there a way they can get in touch with you? Can they email you, or can they email the Salvation Army?
Yes, ma'am. They can contact me. My phone number is 731-394-5617. And my email is lat3c@mtmail.mtsu.edu.
Now, that is the achieving side of Lawrence Tumpag. Let's talk about the scholarly side, the bright side. You are a McNair Scholar, and you recently went over spring break to Chennai, India, to present research. You sent back some absolutely gorgeous photographs. I don't know who took them of you, but with you in the Taj Mahal in the background, standing next to a statue of Gandhi, dressed in very colorful, terrific-looking local garb. You look like you're very comfortable there and very happy there. Tell me about your India experience.
Well, India was a great experience. It was just memorable, and I'll never forget this opportunity I was given through McNair. The reason why I went to India was because I had done research already relating to attitudes of college students college students' attitudes towards abortion based on their race, religion, and political affiliation. And I also did another research project relating to the Philippines. It's a broad cultural scope of the history, the people, and the land. And basically, I've had a cultural display, or I've been collecting cultural items throughout my life, and I was always sharing them at schools that I went to, such as the community college in Jackson, Tennessee.
And you've had a display of dolls that represent different tribes, different Filipino tribes, on display on sort of a rotating basis in a display case outside the Global Studies office in Peck Hall here at MTSU.
Yes, ma'am. One of the ways I wanted to contribute to this school is by sharing my culture. So when I came to MTSU, I sought a place that would allow me to share my items that I have. And it was difficult at first because it wasn't a lot of availability of space for me to share these things. But the Global Studies Department really sought value in my endeavor. And so they allowed me some sections of their showcase next to their office. And they told me that I could share them as long as, you know, I wished. And so I've been doing that ever since for this year. And thanks to you, Ms. Jenna Logue, I was able to be published, or an article was published about me and my cultural display on the alumni record. So that was a great honor. And also the Daily News Journal of Murfreesboro.
Well, it was my pleasure to do it. It's a very lovely display, and it's indicative of your interest in an international vision or an international scope, getting beyond the provincial, that which is right before our eyes, right within our own comfort zone. What was your impression, speaking of exchanging cultural values, of the Indian culture?
Back to India.
Yeah.
Well, the Philippines is a country that has been influenced by many peoples and travelers upon its islands. And one of the peoples that influenced the Philippines in early times were the Indians and their civilization. It was great to be speaking about the history of my country, because if it were not for the people from India sharing their writing systems and religions and foods and various other aspects, our first writing system in the Philippines stems from an Indian writing script, and in the Philippines it's known as Babayan, and so we actually inherited that from the Indians. So it was great to correlate the two.
You felt common ground there. You felt the common threads between your culture and the Indian culture.
It did. It was a great correlation, and it was just also a great opportunity to give recognition to the Indian people and to, I guess, thank them for the influence they've had on the world, especially within Asia.
Lawrence Tumpak has overcome tremendous adversity in his life. A future graduate of MTSU, future social worker, McNair Scholar, honor student. Lawrence, thank you for being with us today on MTSU on the Record. You're a student that I have great admiration and respect for, and it was my pleasure to have you as a guest on the program.
Thank you so much. And in the Filipino language, maraming salamat.
Which means?
Thank you.
Okay. This is MTSU on the Record. I'm Jenna Logue. Please join us again at the same time next Sunday. Don't forget, you can check out the podcast at your leisure at mtsunews.com. And we're available on iTunes.